You probably will notice and figure out quickly why the middle of today's gospel was cut out of the lectionary, which was the reason, of course, why the Holy Family was fleeing to Egypt. When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. Rachel, of course, being the wife of Jacob, renamed by God as Israel. So there's that. That's a happy thing, or not. Once again, I wish you Merry Christmas. Great transition, right? Great segue. Merry Christmas. Story of dead children. And this season is one in which we embrace the coming of the light. There's something that happens when light comes to dark places, right? We see things anew. Things we couldn't see before. Things that we didn't know were there before. And if we're especially observant, as my friend David points out, we can see that the light, when the light comes in front of us, it casts a shadow behind us. But normally, and according to our faith, the coming of the light is a joyful thing. It relieves our despair and provides great joy and hope in a time of fear and anguish. But for those comfortable in the dark, notably the criminal, the thief, and the abuser, but also others, like those in candle sales, or those private ambulance companies who benefit from what happens in the darkness, and all those who profit from the dark. For these comfortable people, the coming light is unwelcome and threatening. There are many who do not want truth revealed, who don't want their actions to be known, to be seen. And there are many for whom the light brings pain and anguish. Right? We see this when an unwelcome report is released on torture, right? Or to our church when it is invited to take up questions and considerations of human sexuality. If we stay in the dark, we say, if we can, we will just all be happy all the time. Exposure to the light, we argue, is the source of pain, right? Not, of course, the pain of the prisoner or the minority or those living with pain. No. The real pain is of revealed truth, right? So keep quiet, we tell each other. So at Christmas, we have these two different stories that we sort of push together often in our manger scenes, often in our plays that we show. Off these two different stories of Jesus' birth, and we shove them together, and we read the first one, or one of them, on Christmas Eve, the one from the evangelist we call Luke, and it has the birth story, right? And they're in Bethlehem, they're on their way because of taxes, and there are these shepherds who come to this Holy Family by night after this visit from the angel. That's one story. But in Matthew, we get no telling of a birth. In fact, we have this family moving, it seems, to Bethlehem. And we get the wise men being directed to Bethlehem where an out-of-wedlock birth has already happened. And this is a much more complicated story than we normally take it for, right? And we'll hear more of it, that first part of this chapter, chapter 2 of Matthew, on Tuesday night when we gather in the chapel for Epiphany. Right? But these wise men who come from the east are directed by a star, a light, which guides them all the way from their foreign home to this country of Judea. But they leave the star behind once they get there and head to the capital city because they want to start asking around the locals. Ignoring, of course, what the star is trying to lead them to, they go to Jerusalem. They want to see if anybody there understands the vision or had a similar vision or had heard any word about this special baby that had been born, this now infant, a baby who would become their king. And they follow the star, right? They follow the star until they get really close, and then they decide that the star is not good enough, that they need to seek help from the experts. They look to the authorities, and they trust their vision enough to get them there, but not to finish the job, it seems. The star, which will bring them right to the place where the Holy Family is living. Those are the first set of players in the story. Now, the news that the wise men bring, which they seem to blab about to everyone who will listen in the capital, is heard with fear. When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him, it says. Herod, who would be a monster to us, the one who will shortly enough slaughter all of these toddlers, is not alone in his fear. In this world of darkness, the leadership, the capital, the ones in charge do not want the light to come near. They do not want the truth to be revealed. It works out really well for them, thank you very much. This unwelcome news leads to action. And it isn't just Herod that acts. News of an infant king is destabilizing to the whole system, particularly this usurper king, but all those people who support him. Since these wise men who bring the bad news to them, good news to the rest of the world, do not return with their whereabouts, it's time for plan B, they decide, so we'll kill all the infant boys. That'll take care of the problem. And here is where I make things even more troubling by reminding us that according to tradition, Herod is God's chosen leader. God's chosen leader of the Hebrew people. He is not merely a political leader, but a religious one as well. So his actions are to be interpreted as God's. Troubling thing, then, to witness such inhuman cruelty from one wearing that mantle. Now, the third party in the story, the one we are much more likely to take an interest in and sympathize with, is the Holy Family, who have to move. They hear what is going to happen, and they have to leave to survive. So they head to Egypt to live and wait it out. And after Herod dies, his son takes over, so Joseph does not take them back to their newer home in Bethlehem, instead taking them back to Galilee, to Nazareth, this tiny podunk town in which they could disappear, where the king could not find them. So the light comes from Egypt, not to the capital, but to the middle of nowhere, to the darkness of the country. And these two images that are in this story need to be expressed directly. We need to deal with them directly. And I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. I'm just reminding you that it is Egypt that brought salvation and safety to the family of Israel during the famine. And it is Egypt that would enslave the Hebrew people generations later. And it is from Egypt that they would flee. From Egypt that God would liberate the people. And Egypt would once again now serve as a temporary haven for God's people, for Joseph, Mary, and Jesus fleeing a massacre of children. Jesus, the new Moses. And after their liberation, these people, God's chosen people, God came to these people in great power and terrifying might and in a vision that was stunning, and then comes to them to live and be, taking the form of a cloud during the day and a burning fire at night. And God would travel with them in the wilderness, taking a form that would be seen easily in darkness and in light, in night and in day. The star guiding those wise men then, moving with them, leading them to the one who is the light that would itself leave for the wilderness for a time and return to Israel home, that promised land to the Hebrew people. This stuff, all of that stuff, right? This is the story of what we are trying to do when we celebrate Christmas. We celebrate that in our darkness, a light comes. A light that reveals, a light which guides, a light who brings hope with him. And the incarnate word in Jesus is revelation and presence. He is how we come to understand what is around us and how we know that God is with us. That's what we're celebrating, right? So the good news then is not in the presence or in the good cheer we spread directly, though these are good things. And the good news is not listening to a story and feeling happy, though it can be discovered there. The good news is found where light is shown, and where darkness is beaten back. Where the way things are can no longer be obscured, and our selfish desires for comfort extinguish the candles of truth. The good news reveals God and is of God. So the rest, the darkness, the confusion, the nastiness, is of something else. So this is our season of truth. We're coming close to the end of it. Our season of light. It is casting candles in the dark corners we refuse to visit. It's making new plans and making changes we've been avoiding. It is ringing in the new year with an examined courage rather than willful ignorance. And we have plenty to look at. We have plenty of truth we like to avoid. I know I have lots that I like to avoid. But the good news reveals this. Reveals our selfish desires and our callous relationship to our neighbors. Reveals our fear of the unknown and of change and of discomfort, because plenty of this is working great for us as individuals. But for us as a people, for us as a church, this we struggle with. We're confused and afraid because too often we find comfort in ignorance. And we seem to, anyway, benefit from not talking about things. But God is about revealing. God guided the wise men to Judea, but they could not trust enough to keep going, so they bailed. They asked the people who liked the dark, right, the very worst people to ask about the light. They could not see that the expertise they needed was already there, already present with them. Isn't that our greatest fear? Isn't that what we try to hide, that we maintain this cloak of darkness in our lives? That we don't want to be reminded that our comforts, that they all aren't of God? That our ways are not all God's ways? And that we, like those leaders in Jerusalem, make some pretty compromising decisions to get ahead in this world. And God is not a hider. God is a revealer. Jesus won't stay hidden in a backwoods town. And our own problems get revealed to the world long before we recognize them in ourselves. So in this great season of light and revelation, may we have the courage to examine our own lives and our public life together. May we see in this illuminated state the great beauty of creation and what God is showing us today. And may we have eyes to see all the good we are called to join, all the evil we are called to end, and all the transforming work that God is already doing here to us in our community, to all that we love and care for here and everywhere.